listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Paul Strolley right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Michael Sterling.
And I am Paul Strolley.
And you're listening to State of the Arts.
As always, powered by Breakdown Services. Delighted to have them as our presenting sponsor. Michael, thank Breakdown Services for us, would you?
You bet I will. We'd like to thank our presenting sponsor, as Paul just said, Breakdown Services, for supporting us this year. Breakdown Services is the entertainment industry standard used around the world, providing the most professional means to reach talent agents as well as actors when casting a project. To learn more about Breakdown Services, visit them at breakdownexpress.com.
Our thanks also goes out to performingartslive.com for their support of our live arts calendar. Performing Arts Live is the most comprehensive online directory of event information for music, theater, and dance events in Southern California. And we're trying something a little different this episode.
We are.
Our first broadcast with a remote interview.
Sounds so ominous.
Doesn't it? Let's
yes.
hope it's not yeah. ominous. Let's hope it's a lot of fun.
Well, we say that because we are accustomed to having our guests in studio.
And as we do have a guest in studio today.
And we do.
Delighted to have. Michael, you know him better than I. I just met him a mere moments ago, I believe. Actually, seconds ago. He just strolled into the studio. He's one of those celebrity types, isn't he?
He is. He's kind of a stealth celebrity, you know? Excuse me. In studio with us today, ladies and gentlemen, is recording artist and nightclub star Anthony Field, who will be headlining Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's in Studio City, California, this Sunday, December 12th, with his all-new show, You and Me on Christmas Eve, and he will be performing with his partner, Chip Smith, his wonderful writer, Chip Smith, and his band. And that will be something we'll talk about a little bit later, Anthony.
Anthony, happy to have you.
Second half hour. Yes, welcome.
Good. Now, let me make sure I have this right. It's Anthony, not Anthony.
Exactly.
Okay, good. And I recognize the face because I think I saw the you're promoted on the back of this month's program for Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's, yes?
That sounds right. Yeah.
Okay, yes.
He hangs out at Sterling's.
Very good. I don't hang out. Don't say it that way.
You're kind of a regular
No, you make me sound like a guy in a raincoat standing outside. I don't hang out.
That's a whole nother show, Paul.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's a whole nother show.
And actually, my father is with us today. My father's
in the studio visiting.
We
should have applause for
what?
Your father.
Oh, that's
and
we should
Anthony,
have applause.
Shouldn't we?
I'm sorry. Well, Anthony and my father. There we go.
There you go. We spare no expense here.
Only the finest.
Yeah.
And doesn't that sound realistic?
It does.
Isn't that amazing? Like you're right out in the lobby there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like there's a 100 people out there who know to stop applauding at exactly the same time.
Exactly the same time. Paul, here we are we're heading into Christmas. It's the 6th of December today, and
we are
19 more shopping days for the gifts for the family. And
we are.
And it makes me kind of stop and pause and think about Christmas's past, you know? I'm sure you have some memories of Christmas past, do you not, Anthony?
Absolutely.
Yeah, really standout memories, something special. What was something special for you?
You know, I always remember having Christmas dinner with the entire family, and my great-grandmother would come in and prepare a meal that she'd cooked and, you know, made raviolis by hand and gnocchis by hand, and it was awesome.
Are you of Italian descent, Anthony?
Well, you know by that word.
Half Italian, yeah.
Oh, really? Just the good half?
Both halves are good, so I can't say that the other half's
What's the other half?
The other half's kind of a mix of German, Russian,
okay, so see, I'm a half Italian and half German.
There you go.
So, yeah.
So the word, what was the giveaway on that?
I heard
gnocchi?
What? Gnocchi? No, it was the proper pronunciation of gnocchi that we got. Yeah. Dad, well, actually, that'll be the one thing my dad will chime in on. Dad, give us the proper pronunciation of gnocchi.
Yes, please do,
gnocchi.
There we go. Gnocchi. See? He was dead on with it. See? So we had it right there.
Yeah.
So.
Well, you know, that takes me back, Anthony, to a family gathering, a family Christmas party given by my oh-so-proper mother and father when I was very young. But I was at the age of puberty, if you will, and I was waiting for this day to happen. You know, you know how you are at that age. I don't know about you personally, but I was that way. And I couldn't count. count the minutes fast enough until
okay, no, you say that like that's something we all did.
Didn't we? Well, we're all guys here.
Counting the days. Yeah, but I think you were the only one who had the days marked off on the calendar.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well,
I think you definitely everybody looks forward to it.
Yeah. Look forward to but counting the days is another thing. Looking forward is one thing, but counting the days.
Well,
is
because
a little...
you know, I wanted to be like my dad. I wanted to be a grown up, and I think that was, you know, the physicality.
Gotcha.
The change in physicality was the benchmark of puberty in my eyes.
I think the question is, are you literally counting the days, checking them off on the calendar, or just thinking about it?
Well, in my case, I actually was checking them off on the calendar. Yes. Yeah.
Now, I thought, when you said Christmas stories, I thought you were going to tell the very strange one about the Santa letters.
Oh,
the letters to
Santa. Yes.
But now you got to tell both of them. So to finish this, because you've set this up too juicy. We're dying to know what's going to happen now.
So this day came. It just happened to fall upon the day that my parents were giving their annual Christmas party.
Mm-hmm.
And we were all, the three of us as children, were all sent to our rooms, you know, in a nice way with dinner and whatnot. And, you know, for the duration of the evening, because it was all adults out there and there was cocktail time and hors d'oeuvres and that business was going on. And so I was in my room and, you know, reading or listening to music or whatever I was doing. And I checked myself, if you will, and...
I guess that's the most polite way to put it.
It was there. I had matured. This day had come, and I couldn't contain my excitement. I could not. I was so thrilled that I just kind of bolted out of my room, into the middle of the party, saw my father across the crowded room, and I pulled down my pajama pants. I said, "Dad, I'm just like you." And there was a big hush over the Christmas party.
And what he meant by that was that his father was known for pulling down his pants at parties.
Wow.
Like, Dad, I'm just like you.
It's a Christmas surprise.
Christmas surprise. Came a little early.
And a new place for mistletoe, right, which I don't want to think about.
Grounded or quarantined, as my father said, for like a month, you know, for that little episode. But it didn't do any psychological damage to me, thank you.
Is that what they mean by a Hanukkah bush? Lady! Hey!
Something like that.
Okay.
No, to make the other story very quick. That when I was a kid, I was very conscientious about publicity for myself.
Right.
And I would do anything and everything to draw awareness.
Self-promote,
to myself.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was a kid actor and whatnot. And so I came up with an idea that I took directly to a newspaper, which was that I would be the conduit between the children at Christmas time and Santa Claus. And I would intercept the letters from children to make sure that Santa Claus answered them, so the and that they would receive a letter back.
Right.
And the local paper loved this idea. They photographed me. We set up the photograph with the letters, you know, pouring out of a bag, and I was in receipt, and I was looking through the letters. So I was the representative of Santa, and I had no idea. Now, my parents didn't know about it, by the way, until they saw it in the paper, which was another thing. Right. And I had no idea that this thing was going to work. And we were flooded with, you know, mail coming in bags. The postmen were carrying bags up. And it was hilarious. I was very proud of what I had done, excepting now that I had to really fulfill this responsibility of writing.
So you were basically deciding who was naughty and who was nice.
Pretty much. Got to the point where it was so overwhelming that my parents had to mimeograph in, you know, purple mimeograph ink, a letter, a standard form letter that was signed by Santa that went back to these kids.
Do you know how many hearts you crushed with that? First of all, I'm already imagining the headline, "Guy who pulls pants down at party sends letter to children." I didn't see that. But it was a mimeograph that you sent from Santa?
Yeah.
I
had to. It was thousands of letters.
Mommy, I sent a letter to Santa, and he sent back a bloody form letter.
That would have upset me as a child. The blue mimeograph, the purple mimeograph that smelled like the mimeograph.
Yeah, you could smell it for days. Yeah.
Yes. So all in your heartless quest for self-promotion, mm-hmm. you ended up crushing the dreams of children.
Perhaps.
Oh, friggin' ho, pal. Yeah.
Perhaps. Nothing says the holiday season.
Yeah. Really, like a mimeograph
yeah.
letter.
Yeah, nothing says the holidays like a form letter from Santa.
Oh, my gosh. Well, yeah. Paul, you must have something that happened to you.
I don't have anything that compares to that, Michael. I have good holiday memories
really?
Where I didn't crush the dreams of
really?
Children. That's what I... No, I have one real brief one. One Christmas, which actually involves my dad. My dad was having a hell of a time trying to get the Christmas tree straight. You know, just to, it's in the little thing with the three wing nuts that you tighten. You know, the little cotter things that hold the trunk of the tree and the thing with the water. I don't mean to lose you with my technical, you know, Christmas jargon, but. Could not get the Christmas tree to stand up straight at all. Just worked on it. It was getting more and more aggravated. Finally, he storms out. I can't do this. I'll do it later. And he leaves the living room. And my brother runs up. And the two pictures that are behind the Christmas tree that he's been using as a reference, he just tilts them at the same angle as the Christmas tree. And it was just like, Dad, I think I got it. He comes in. How did you do that so quickly? So just one of those. I don't.
Did you remember that?
He did not know about that.
Was that a true story?
Must be true, but I forgot about it.
Yeah. It must be true. How sweet.
It must be true, but he didn't, you know, I don't know. I haven't, that was years, it's 30 years ago, so I barely remember. I don't even know if my brother remembers it, you know. But anyway, let's go on to our first interview, shall we?
Absolutely.
This was our interview of the two stars of the current production of West Side Story going on at the Pantages, Pampaya Bataba, yeah. playing through, it's through January 2nd, right?
Through January 2nd, yes.
And which is actually the closing of the Broadway production as well.
Mm-hmm.
But this is just the end of their L.A. stop, or is this the end of the tour?
L.A. stop only.
Oh, okay. So yeah. It's the L.A. stop
tour
only.
Tour goes on. Tour has been on the road since October.
Oh, okay. Yes. And the two, well, you know what? These are, do you remember the names, Michael?
Well,
do you have
them
in front of you there?
Yes, of course I do.
They
so
are
in line with our show, Paul, of
Allie,
last week, and which focused on the motion picture adaptation of West Side Story, the movie, and our in-studio guests were Academy Award winner George Securus and Academy Award nominee Russ Tamblyn from the film. We are equally thrilled to welcome Broadway performers Ali Ewalt and Kyle Harris, who are currently, as Paul said, starring in the U.S. national tour of West Side Story on stage now at the Pantages Theater in Hollywood.
And we had a chance to go backstage.
We had a chance to go backstage.
Talk to them just yesterday. So let's give a listen.
Between shows. Yeah.
Ali Ewalt, Kyle Harris, welcome to State of the Arts. What a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
Very excited. Thank you for joining us for our inaugural recording. This is our first remote, so we're very excited about that. And we are excited to have seen the show that we just saw, West Side Story at the Pantages. We're both. Michael saw it on opening. He was here on Wednesday.
Yes.
And I just saw it today. I saw today's performance. And just, you know, you hear West Side Story, it's so, you know, it's such so iconic in musical theater, and to see two people bring such new energy and such a wonderful energy to the show, I was floored by it. I absolutely loved it. Did you enjoy it as much as
absolutely.
I did?
Absolutely. I mean, it's stunning. You know, it's, first of all, as a native Californian, to come to this theater is something very, very special. We don't take it for granted that the Pantages is here. So walking into the venue alone is exciting, and then hearing that orchestra kick off with that score, it was just, it was a very emotional experience for me.
Yeah.
And earlier in the week, we had the two stars of the motion picture, George Securus, who played Bernardo, and Russ Tamblyn, who played Riff, with us in studio, talking about their experience.
That was Mondays.
Last Monday. Talking about their experience in having done the film and what that was like, and shooting it over the period of a year that it took for them to shoot the film.
So this is a unique perspective for us, having just talked to the folks from the film, and especially with things like Krupke and with Kuhl being swapped around the sequence. But if we could, I didn't mean to cut you off, Michael,
Absolutely.
But if we could start with you, could you give the listeners just a little bit of the history of how it came about, this role for you? Was it simple as auditioning for it, or just your journey to this production of West Side Story?
Sure. It was vaguely straightforward. I actually auditioned for the Broadway revival when they were first auditioning for that. And I had a couple callbacks, but it wasn't really meant to be at that point. And then I was on the international tour that was cast by the same casting team, So I did that for a while, and I came back, and I heard that they were auditioning for this tour and also for Broadway replacements. And my agent actually had to beg to get me into it. And really, because they had seen me previously, and they wanted new people.
Okay.
But luckily, they agreed to see me. And so I went in for David Sain, our director, and our music director. And then they brought me back for Arthur Lawrence. And so I had a big, long call back with him, and he gave me notes on all the scenes. And we pretty much went through the entire show. We had to do the final scene. We did all of that business, and then I came back again for all of the producers and all of those people, and I read with Kyle. There were a bunch of girls auditioning for Maria, so I did that as well.
Kyle, were you already cast at that point?
When I met Allie, it was more of like a chemistry read.
Okay.
I think it was like your final callback
mm-hmm.
thing,
yeah.
And they had like a bunch of other Marias there that day that they were kind of cutting down, and I just was there to kind of be paired with.
Oh, gotcha.
There was like three at the end
yeah.
that they ended
mm-hmm.
up.
Oh, okay.
You know,
oh, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
No, not at all. But that was it. It was actually, but it was amazing because after auditioning for, I think there were 25 people in the room. Usually there are four or five. Then I went through everything and read with Kyle and read with Michelle, who plays Anita. And then they ended up calling me about an hour and a half later. And we're like, yep, you got the job. After having waited, I waited for months between my callbacks. So it was,
and
it was
an
very
hour and
satisfying.
A half later.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wait a minute. I should be more stressed about this. I want to
exactly.
lose sleep over this.
Exactly.
Right. Okay, so Kyle, what was your journey?
It was similar. I also auditioned for the Broadway revival cast
okay.
for the two show Tony on Broadway. They have just a Tony that does the matinees, and then the other Tony will do the six show evening performances.
Oh, okay.
On our tour, they have me doing all eight. And
lucky you.
Yeah, so lucky. And when I was in for that, they told me we're gonna save you for our tour. And as like a fresh-faced New Yorker that was just out there as a young actor.
Well, that sounds like walking to the executioner,
exactly.
doesn't it? We're going to save you for the tour.
Of course. Knowing full well that wasn't going to launch for another year. And I'm like, oh, okay, thanks, guys. You know, nice meeting you. Literally a year later, they gave me a phone call, and they were like, does Kyle still want to play Tony on our tour? And my agents were like, let me give him a call and ask. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, I didn't really lose too much sleep over it.
It's
either.
Right up
just
there
kind
with
of
top
like,
five stupid questions.
Yeah.
Do you want to play Tony on the National Tour of West Side Story?
No, that.
I gotta get my feet scraped.
Right. So that's kind of just how it happened. And then I was there the final day. Allie was there, and they told me to come back for a chemistry read just to kind of pair up because they knew that they had found the riff and that they were like looking for the Marias that day, but they just wanted to have the whole team there to see everybody
gotcha.
In action and be like, is this what we want for sure? And just to kind of put a stamp on it, you know. And then from that point on, I was like, when I read with Allie, I was kind of like, please.
Yeah.
And ended up
really?
You,
so you knew right then.
Or
yeah.
something tells me.
Yeah. There was three girls that walked in the room, and as soon as I read it with Allie, I was like, okay, this is good. This will be your best if you let it happen.
So. Well, the performance that the two of you give on the stage is very dynamic, and you know, the affection that you have for one another as the characters
yes.
certainly reads loud and clear out into the audience. So
Michael and I were talking right after the show, after today's performance, and I said this, and I don't know if it's where it really comes from me, but I know the show. I did the show in college, and you know, I really do think that so many of the young people who were so affixed with American Idol and that,
mm-hmm.
and to see something like this, where it's like, you know what, some of the most beautiful moments in the show are the smallest.
Yeah.
And there's an eloquence to the quiet. You know, we talked about the quote: "The music is silence between the notes."
Right. Mm-hmm.
And the fact that you both have these pristine voices, but you couple that with the fact that when there's these stepladder notes and they're so beautifully and I want to say quietly executed, but they're not, you know, it's not that it's small or anything like that. There's just such a beauty to that economy. You know, such a beauty to that distilled, those final notes that just like, you know, the show trusts the silences. And so many of the times you're just so barraged with different things. And it just really, I mean, I don't know the jargon, so I don't know if I phrased
that
properly.
Absolutely.
But and the silence, what he just said,
the one thing that, you know, this is so beautiful in this show is how the first act ends in that silence, and
yeah.
the second act.
And the second act.
Yeah.
And how many shows could get away with that?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. You know, because this show, I think, is such an important piece of work mm-hmm. in American theater. I don't think anybody would disagree with that, but I think it's something that every child in this country should see at some point in their life growing up so that they have this reference, just as they should see the motion picture version, because I think the motion picture version for movie musicals changed the course of where musicals were going at that point too, because it was so edgy, you know.
Now, along those lines, in comparing those two things, one of the things the film and the play and what we talked about, swapping out Krupke and Kuhl, the sequence and everything, what I'm most curious about is, for the two of you, it's established choreography, it's established direction from the Broadway. How is that as a performer taking that in? Is it difficult for you to, do you feel a little hobbled by that? Do you feel like you're fitting some shoes? Do you feel like, I mean, how do you make it your own when you're honoring something that's already taken place?
Right.
Is that what you have?
Well, I think actually we were really lucky in the rehearsal process. I mean, I grew up on the movie and of course loved Natalie Wood's performance and all of that. But luckily our director, David Saint, was really great about letting us sort of find our own characters and use our own take on them, even different from the current Broadway production of it as well. And so I think we really got to sort of put our own spin on it without feeling sort of closed in by that. And then, you know, it's also amazing to sort of have this history behind it. So that sort of, you know, bringing us up as well and something to aspire to.
That's true. To
it's
honor.
Also great. Yeah.
Did you feel similarly?
I definitely felt that way because, you know, you grow up and you're doing theater and then you think, you know, Tony, you're like, this is such an iconic character. Yeah. I'm like, I'm not a Tony because you got to be a certain way or a certain this. But it's just really as simple. It's just that he's a boy in love with, happened to be the wrong girl at the wrong time kind of thing. And feeling like you had to fill those shoes of what they expected, but then you realize you got cast for you and what you bring to the role. So it's as much as I could bring personally to it. I feel like that the more unique I would be in the part, as opposed to being your typical, you know, 1950s leading man, you know, cookie cutter. And I definitely think that, like, the casting is all it all makes sense. But at the same time, I think like each part is definitely is brought out their own personality to the role. And
yeah, that's a great way to put it, though. Yeah, you were cast, and you're there to bring your own, obviously your own spin to it. I was just, you know, especially with watching the choreography, and you're more versed in the musical theater than I am, but just that choreography is just, you know,
it's impeccable.
It's impeccable.
It's classic as the music.
And timeless. Yes. It does not look remotely dated. Mm-hmm. To watch that, it just, you know, it's just so... And once again, going back to the whole silences, the economy of movement, some of the most beautiful moments for me, they're just real slow, uniform actions of the people. When, you know, it's the less flashy things that, you know, speak the loudest.
Exactly. And Paul, I wanted to ask you a question before we get... you said you did the show when you were in school?
I did the show.
In college or high school?
Did I say college?
I don't know. I'm asking you.
I did after high school.
And what role would that have been?
I was Tony.
You were Tony?
Yes.
Wow.
I played Tony, and I
in
2 years I did Tony, and then the following year I did Jesus in Jesus Christ Superstar.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And that was quite magical. Yes. Of course, I was, 140 pounds on the cross. That was magical. We're not here to talk about me.
Oh, my God.
We're certainly not here to put that image in people's heads, because people could be eating while they're listening to our show.
So you're touring the country, and this is not new to you. I know you've done two other national tours, right? And this is your first
national
tour.
Yeah.
And what's the experience like for you?
It's definitely, it's thrilling. At the same time, it's just as challenging because you're constantly changing environments, like your living situation versus the theater you're in, versus like the climate that you're in.
Right.
And you're fighting, you're battling the allergies and whatnot, and you travel on your day off to the next venue, you open the next day for critics, and you're looking out on stage to brand new exit signs in the dark. You know? And like you're hearing a whole different soundboard come through, so there's instruments that you haven't heard before, and you just kind of breathe and let it all go. But it's one of those things that's like, once we get through this, I think we'll kind of be fearless, because it's like we've been able to take on so much pressure. But to really kind of like, you know, smooth it out and be calm and cool and collected about it, you know, it's kind of like we'll be able to hold our own as much as possible after this.
Oh, and yeah, no, the tour is, you know, you're in a you're doing a Broadway show. You're at one theater. You're going to place. You get that
and
whole
you go
comfort
home
thing.
To your comfort.
Yeah, yeah. No, I was on the road for a long time with a one person show. I've never heard the exit sign thing from so many of the exit signs are different places. There's a fire.
We just played San Francisco, and they and the theater that we were in, the Orpheum, had Wicked in it for a long time, and I guess so long that they changed the exit signs to green. For Wicked,
okay.
Which we noticed they were everywhere, just little green exit signs.
That's different, like character font. That's an exit.
Well, that's San Francisco, so you know the fire marshal is gay. So it was just a little flash. It's a little more flash.
Exactly.
You both have websites. So please share your website addresses with our listeners so they know where to go to learn more about you.
Sure. Mine is AllieEwalt.com. So AllieEwalt.com.
And Kyle,
mine is KyleAHarris.com.
And I'm glad you said the A because I looked at KyleHarris.com.
Which is taken by some other character.
You go right into a house.
Yeah.
You know, that,
but it's not adult or anything, is it?
Oh, no, no, no.
Oh, okay.
No,
yeah,
no,
that, just... that would be unpleasant.
Right. Mom, I'm on the internet.
This isn't the Tony that we saw.
Wait a minute.
What has this tour done to him? So you've been out on tour since October, is that correct?
We opened officially October 6th, but
right.
we got to Detroit. Middle of September.
Yeah, and your run here at the at Pantages is through January 2nd, which ironically is the closing of the show on Broadway at the same date.
Yes, right.
So it is. It is a West Side Story at the Pantages, which with our lovely guests, the Tony and Maria, we're very, very grateful. Thank you for joining us here.
Of course,
and,
thank you for having us.
Tucking us in on a two-show day. And I think our first remote went well, don't you?
Yes, I think so, too. And you'll be able to hear it tomorrow yourselves.
Tomorrow at 4 o'clock. Right. Thank you both. We're very, very grateful. And we will see you next week on State of the Arts.
So that was our first remote, Michael.
That was Allie Ewalt and Kyle Harris from the Pantages Theater's production of West Side Story, currently touring the country.
A little staticky, but okay. A little bit of a buzz. But when you consider the whole thing was recorded on an iPhone, I think it was pretty impressive.
There you go. That's technology for you, right? Technology today. You take your iPhone and you do a remote interview with
it. I tell you. And
lovely,
I thought we would go in and we would look so, you know, homespun and hickster. And then they were like, oh, no, we do everything on an iPhone.
Of course, yeah. No, well, you know, they're 22 years old, those kids. So
yeah, that's all they know.
That's all they know. Exactly. We have an arts calendar, Paul.
Yes, we do have an arts calendar. Would you mind terribly kicking it off for us, Michael?
I will indeed. Visions of Sugar Plums and I Will Dance in Your Head after seeing the Pacific Symphony's presentation of Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker for Kids, a delightful Christmas ballet performed in a condensed version created just for kids. This seasonal favorite finishes with a grand holiday finale and is sure to sell out at Segerstrom Concert Hall at the Orange County Performing Arts Center in Costa Mesa, California. Pacific Symphony's family musical mornings are fun and fascinating 45-minute concerts designed especially for children 5 to 11 years of age. During the musical carnival, enjoy free hands-on activities for children who can meet symphony musicians, sing, dance, play, color, try musical instruments and enjoy themselves in thematic activities that are relative to the concert. It's a perfect opportunity to enjoy family fun time together while enhancing your child or your grandchild's love of music.
MSG Entertainment brings a brand new edition of America's number one holiday show, the Radio City Christmas Spectacular, starring the world-famous Rockettes, tonight and tomorrow night at the Honda Center in Anaheim, California, and December 9th through December 12th at the Nokia Theater downtown Los Angeles, adjacent to the Staples Center. This dazzling holiday production is guaranteed to create wonderful family memories to last a lifetime.
And for more information about these shows, please visit us at stateoftheartsla.com and also perform PerformingArtsLive.com.
Now, collectively, Michael, you and I have seen a number of shows in the past couple of weeks, and we have a number of things to talk about today. Three productions in particular. Next Normal at the Amundsen Theater in Los Angeles.
Yes.
Harps and Angels at the Mark Taper Forum in Los Angeles.
Yes.
And the aforementioned West Side Story at the Pantages Theater in Hollywood. So, boy, you know, in the past 2 weeks, we've hit three of the major theaters in town.
We hit the ground running. Yes, indeed, we did.
And now, we saw Next to Normal on different nights, but we both saw it. Do you have you want to kick that off or what?
Well,
your
you know, I was thrilled to be there. Obviously, our friends at the Center Theater Group and the Amundsen and the Taper and all of the theaters there—they do fabulous work. They do fabulous presentations, and they certainly put together a beautiful opening night for Next to Normal, which was a big winner of Tony Awards on Broadway a couple years back, and this was its West Coast launch of its national tour,
right,
with its original star Alice Ripley,
and she won a Tony for it.
She
right?
won a Tony yeah. for it. The music written by Tom Kitt, it book and lyrics by Brian Yorkie, and starring a wonderful, wonderful cast of people: Kurt Hansen, Emma Hunton, Preston Sattler, and some others, with Jeremy Kushner also featured in this show. And directed by Michael Grieff. Here's my take on it, Paul. I mean, I love going to the theater. You know, I love musical theater. And I was so ready to love this show. And unfortunately for me, it was a show that didn't resonate with me. The story was rather depressing. Number one, that has nothing to do with anything other than the fact that it is a rock musical, which
right.
I don't know how many people realize that about this particular show. Unless you're very, very serious, diehard, you know, patrons of the arts.
Right.
But I found that to be one of the biggest problems for me, was that I had a very difficult time understanding the lyrics of what they were singing, because it was more screeching than it was singing.
See, now,
for
a
good part of the show.
But I would disagree with you there. I don't know if it could be termed screeching, because I don't think it's that. I think that Alice Ripley is amazing in this role.
Oh, truly,
and she really
is.
And she burns it down, and she won a Tony for it, and deservedly so. The problem is, and I don't even know if it was the audio, because I had issues with it too. I don't know if it was the audio or what the issue was, or it was just... There was this vocal affectation that Alice Ripley had put on, that was her singing voice was distinctly different from her speaking voice.
Absolutely.
And it was almost like a Celtic kind of cadence that she would, you know, apply to the vocals.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say, conservatively, I missed about 60% of the lyrical content when she was singing.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get me wrong, the girl's got pipes and she could burn the songs down, and the performance was electric and it was right there. But for someone who is completely unfamiliar with the material, I feel like I missed a good deal of the story because of that vocal choice.
Well, you know, I must say that in defense of this production, and there were many people sitting around me that were totally in the moment with that show.
Oh, standing ovation.
Yeah.
Standing ovation.
And well-deserved. I mean, those actors did their job. They were fantastic singers, and they performed as they should have and gave it their all for some 2.5 hours there. And certainly, you know, things such as the scenic design should be acknowledged, and the costume design was, you know, appropriate for the show, the lighting, the set design, all of that, as I said.
And the girl who played the daughter, I believe, is it Emma Hunton who played
yes.
the daughter? She was wonderful. She was wonderful, loved the work that she did.
Indeed.
Well.
And we urge you to go and see Next to Normal. It's something that perhaps won't play town for Los Angeles for a while in the future, and it is playing through January 2nd.
It's a Tony Award winner, and it won the Pulitzer Prize for Drama, so they're
absolutely.
Doing something right there.
Of course,
just,
absolutely.
You know.
And you can do that by visiting the Music Center, the Center Theater Group, online at centertheatergroup.org for tickets. And as I said, it's beautiful to go downtown anyway during this time of year. It's gorgeous with all the holiday trimmings down there.
Oh, yeah.
And you be the judge about Next to Normal. We'd love to hear from you, actually.
Yeah, actually, we would. That would be a good idea.
Write us through our website.
Send an email to stateoftheartsla@gmail.com. That's stateoftheartsla@gmail.com. Let us know what you think and prove us wrong about, you know, I'm sure that there were a lot of people loving this show. So, Michael, if
yes.
I could take point on Harps and Angels.
I wish you would, please.
Briefly about that, because you did not get a chance to see Harps and
Angels.
I did not. Anthony, could I ask you a question? Are you a Randy Newman fan?
I am a Randy Newman.
You are a Randy Newman. Have you had a chance to see Harps and Angels yet?
I have not had a chance yet.
Okay. This is what I'm curious about, because I'm starting to think that the fact that I was not over the moon about Harps and Angels is because I might be too much of a Randy Newman fan, and the type of Randy Newman that I like. Randy Newman has this... many people know him for his film scores, but I like the dark, the dark sort of earlier Randy Newman, where he sort of creates a character and he sings from the point of view of that character. It's most evidenced in a song called Rednecks. There's a great one called Davy the Fat Boy, very theatrical songs too. And for some reason, I just found that because this was Randy Newman made into Musical Review, I thought the edges were a little too polished and they were a little too... it was a little too clean for me, and I don't say clean in the sense of, like, you know, dirty or whatever, but just a little too, I don't know, is Disneyfied, maybe? Maybe that's the word, Disneyfied?
Possibly, yeah.
You know, it just,
You wanted it, something a little more raw.
Exactly. I like music with the stems and seeds still in it. I don't like those filtered out. And I thought this was very, very filtered. That being said, some of the performances were absolutely amazing.
Well, yesterday they had an amazing cast. Katie Sagal,
who I don't think a lot of people realize has the voice that she does. She
wonderful
was,
voice.
And she was a harlot. She was one of Bette Midler's singers for years. Michael McKean was wonderful. And actually, there were two women who I think deserve of special mention who really burned down the vocals that they did. Storm Large is one of the women, and Adrian Lennox. Those two, everything that they delivered up there, they just really burned it down. And actually, they provided a great deal of that rawness that I thought was missing from a good chunk of the evening. But it was, once again, just very embraced by the audience. People loved it. I have not read a bad review on the show, so that is my take on Harps.
Well, it's always great to see the theater downtown at the Mark Taper Forum because of the more intimate setting of the Forum.
Yeah, exactly.
The way they have redone it recently when it was, renovated. So that's another one, ladies and gentlemen, that you would want to go visit the website to purchase tickets. And that, of course, once again, is centertheatergroup.org.
And then on to what we most recently discussed, the West Side Story, the tour of West Side Story at the Pantages. And Michael, I know we saw this on different nights, but I think both of us had the same take on it, given our discussions.
In a word for me, stunning. Yeah. Absolutely stunning, this production. And hearing the orchestra just begin that amazing classic score by Leonard Bernstein and Stephen Sondheim was chilling enough.
Yeah, that first chord, just they have you.
Absolutely, you know? And then getting into the actual production itself with starring Ali Ewald and Kyle Harris, an amazing supporting cast of top-notch performers, it was like never having seen the show.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I mean, I got very emotional in listening to the music and the story unfolding once again. I mean, it's a very dramatic piece of theater. It's a piece of theater that needs to be seen by, you know, each generation, I think, to keep something classic like this alive. And it's a perfect example, probably like the movie, you know, which was so exemplary of motion picture musicals. But this play is something that is groundbreaking in musical theater.
Yeah. And I also think that just in the Pantages, which is sort of like the theater that time forgot, because it's so such a period venue, and it's, you know, you could have been watching that production in 1959 or 1960. You could have been at West Side Story, and that it was like all-encompassing. It was an all-encompassing evening.
Well, Arthur Lawrence, who is the librettist for this show, his Broadway direction of the show, as it is appearing on Broadway right now, was recreated, for the tour by David Saint, who was the associate director on Broadway. And the original Jerome Robbins choreography is also reproduced, this time by Tony Award nominee Joel McNeely, who did The Boy from Oz and The Life. So this is something, ladies and gentlemen, run down to the Pantages.
Quite a theatrical pedigree going on.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. You know, it's a must-see for everyone, and reliving that wonderful story that took place in the 1950s in New York, which basically follows the doomed love story of two star-crossed lovers from rival gangs, the Jets, a working-class white gang, and the Sharks, first-generation Puerto Ricans. And Tony, a member of the Jets, falls in love with Maria, sister of Bernardo, the leader of the Sharks. And you will not be disappointed, I assure you, even though some of the critics in Los Angeles felt a little differently than you and I, Paul.
Well, you know, I think people should go and make their own decisions. As one of the people at the theater when we went to see it said, it's not really the review, it's the discussion that it generates. And I think this is a great example of that. And that concludes our reviews this
week. Except one thing, for information, please visit Pantages Theater's official website at BroadwayLA.org. And you can purchase your tickets there and see the lovely Ali Ewald as Maria and Kyle Harris as Tony, and they will knock your socks off, I assure.
And very kind, very sweet people. They were very, very pleasant to talk to.
Indeed.
And now, singer and lyricist Anthony Field, together with Chip Smith, jazz pianist and composer, have teamed as songwriters to bring us their newest collection of music to ring in the holidays. With a number of songs sure to become Christmas standards, join them for an extraordinary holiday dinner concert at Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's in Studio City this Sunday, December 12th, celebrating the release of their new CD, You and Me, on Christmas Eve. Let's take a listen.
I've been all around the world at every time of year, but once I spent Christmas with you, girl, one thing was very clear. You could be walking on the Great Wall of China, I could be sitting near the pine in Carolina. Nothing is better to me than you and me on Christmas Eve. And you could be tanning on the beaches of Bermuda.
The smooth, dulcet sounds of Anthony Field.
Wow, what an introduction again, man. Wow. That was great.
Anthony, that sounds fantastic.
Thank you.
That really does.
Is he smooth or what?
That is. It's sort of like it's, you know, I want to have a Manhattan, and I want to spark up a Stogie, and I want to sit next to Dean Martin for that, you know? Just
really?
No, it's got a real cool kind of unaffected vibe to it.
He's a very cool performer. And, you know, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you that are listening to us, of course, you can't see Anthony today in the studio, but I told him this recently. He reminds me of a young Bobby Darin. Do you see it, Paul?
He does. He's you could pull off the young
Bobby
Darin.
He's that cool, too,
yeah.
You know, in his performance. And his partner, Chip Smith, is an awesome writer and player, you know, the pianist in the band. With five pieces, Anthony, is it?
Five pieces in the band, yeah. It's
five pieces at Vitello's?
Five pieces,
yep.
Yeah.
It's going to be tight.
It's going to be good. It's going to be a great show. I mean, Chip is a great producer also. I mean, he pretty much, him and I, but mostly he kind of guided the reins on putting the CD together.
Oh, really?
And it was, you know, for me, I look up to those guys like Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin. Those were kind of the guys that I emulated the most. And they backphrase a lot. It's very jazzy, you know. It's picking where you're going to sing. And when you're writing new songs, you gotta fight against backphrasing. So he was on me a lot about that.
What do you? I don't understand.
Well, you can if when you write a song to the melody line,
right?
Words are associated with certain notes, and you don't want to sing apart from those notes when you're doing it for the first time.
You want
to sing along with the melody.
I gotcha.
And guys like Dean Martin would take a song that everybody knew, and they would sing around the melody.
Right, do like the fill, yeah.
And I can't help but be drawn into doing that.
And I actually think that's very cool. And it's also an art to be able to do that, right?
Yes, yeah. Right? It's
Well, that was how Sinatra defined himself, was phrasing. You know, that was,
Well, we had a song on the album, which is, it's kind of a funny song called Sliding Down the Chimney to You. And we took the song at a much faster pace when we recorded it than we envisioned when we wrote it. So I had to take some liberties on that one in order to fit all the words into the space that I had. But we're really excited about it.
Now, Anthony, have you played Vitello's before?
I have played there a few times.
Oh, okay. Yeah. But this set is specifically assembled for the holidays. Is it a direct copy of what people can expect from the CD, or is it?
Yes, very much like what you're going to hear on the CD, with a lot of extra songs for the holidays. You know, we're going to add in some other Christmas standards that you won't find on the album. You're going to hear some other standards, so it's not just overwhelming you with Christmas for the entire show.
Right, right. Nice mix.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Now, for those of you who haven't been to Sterling's Upstairs of Otello's, and Michael can't really praise it as glowingly as I can because it would be self-serving for him. But I can say that, I mean, you, Tony, you've performed there. Is it okay to call you Tony?
Sure.
I've never heard anybody call you Tony, is it?
I hear it a lot.
Oh, you do? Okay. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's because my dad is between here, so the Paisan factor has come up a great deal. I don't know. Maybe it's just sort of coming on. Tony, can you take care of that thing for me?
Sure, sure. see what I can do.
No, it strikes me as the perfect venue for a holiday event because it's already so, and the style of that. You're so supper clubby. You're so.
What's great about the room is it's got a great intimate feel. Yeah. The lighting, the stage, everything is great. It really is a true supper club, and it's an exciting place to go to listen to music and to hear music.
I think it is. It's a great and it's. It's not. It's a market that's not served out here.
Well, thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate the accolades. And you're right. And that's hopefully what we've accomplished. And by having artists like Anthony Field there, we're delivering the type of entertainment that people expect of the room. So it's awesome. Anthony, a little bit about your background. And the one thing that I really find interesting and kind of cool about you and the way that you approach your music is that and the way that you and Chip write is that everything actually does have a melody that's memorable, and you can actually understand all the lyrics, and, the hook is right, and hey, that's the key to good songwriting, as far as I'm concerned.
You know, for us, we look at the songwriters like Irving Berlin and Alan and Marilyn Bergman and those great songwriters, mm-hmm. Cole Porter, and those are the people that we kind of look at and say, we want to emulate that catchy melody, that something about it, a chord that resonates with the holidays and nostalgic chords, as my co-writer likes to say.
Nostalgic.
He says that we always must have a nostalgic chord in the song. And I leave that to him to make sure it's in there.
Well, he has succeeded because it's great music to listen to. It's a wonderful CD, which I've listened to. And actually, we started playing it at the club a couple of weeks ago, mixing it into our
You know what's especially nice? That's going to be available for sale at the club?
It will.
I just thought about that. That'd be a great thing, not only to go, but then you have a wonderful holiday-themed evening, and then you have the perfect souvenir of that evening to take home with you.
Exactly.
Which is very cool. The website, before we forget, not that we're out of time, but I do want to make sure that we include that, because it is Anthony, not Anthony Field, A-N-T-O-N-Y. And it looks to me, make sure I have this right, Anthony. It's www.anthony, A-N-T-O-N-Y, -field.
Right, there's
so
a dash.
It's dash, dash field.
Somebody else has anthonyfield.com.
There's a lot of that going on. There's a lot of the doubling up on the pages. So anthony-field.com.
That's right. That's right. And for reservations to see Anthony Field and Chip Smith in concert at Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's this coming Sunday, December 12th, please pick up your telephone and call 818-754-8700. And for those of you that can't join us in concert, his CD, You and Me on Christmas Eve, from which the title song that we listen to is from, is available at iTunes, CD Baby, Amazon, and Napster.
Okay, we have 3.5 minutes left, Anthony. One of the things we like to do is we sort of baptize all of our guests by asking them to tell the most embarrassing or worst onstage disaster, performance disaster that they have. Do you have a story you could share with us?
Of course I've got a story. Who doesn't have a story? as far as embarrassing moments go, when I was starting out, I would sing anywhere and everywhere that I got the opportunity to sing. And at that point, my repertoire was not quite as large as it is now. And the songs that I knew weren't as ingrained as maybe they should have been. And I forgot some of the words while I was up on stage singing and got heckled by somebody in the audience, which was great. And
how do you heckle a singer?
He started yelling out the words to me, and that was just that made it worse.
How'd you handle that? So what'd you do?
I smiled and laughed and said thank you and started singing. So I thought I did the best that I could.
Kind. You were kind.
Yeah. So it wasn't too bad.
So what you're saying is that you would be totally prepared if I were to hide in the corner, say at Vitello's on the 12th. And just sort of shout out the wrong lyrics.
I can deal with heckling a lot better now. When you're getting started, you're learning on the fly how to deal with things.
I tell you, dealing with hecklers is an art in and of itself. Did you ever get heckled?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, not heckled. I've had things said to me, but not heckled.
No. I don't mean in your personal life, Michael. I mean it.
Oh, I see. Well, then, yes, I probably have. Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I'm sure I have. But, you know, I think it would be really nice, Paul, for our listeners to get a nice little sampling of Anthony's song.
I think so, too. I think we should
take us out.
Anthony, play us off the air, as
absolutely.
They say. The track is You and Me on Christmas Eve from the CD of the same name, available on CD Baby, I would imagine, Amazon.com.
Yeah, absolutely. About everywhere, actually.
But why buy the CD right now when you can see him live December 12th at Sterling's Upstairs at Vitello's? Buy it after you see the live show.
That's right. And sounds reservations good, are at 818-754-8700.
Let's give that a listen, and we will talk to you next week.
Down in Cuba, but nothing is not, so you'll see. You and me on Christmas Eve. And I hope you'll make a promise. Aside this time of year, when it snows, set it aside. We'll spend the old time together by the tree, my dear. And you could be dining on the streets of Paris. That's a memory you'll always cherish. But nothing compares, you will see.